Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, I can see you're wearing Sony headphones. Very retro, very cool. Classy boy. How you doing? Going on?
I like it. Very, very swag. I'm all right. I'm also wearing a Shibuya shirt. Shibuya!
Whoa, Shibuya! Whoa, the flag.
Very exciting indeed. Yeah, good man. I have started the day by eating tiramisu. And, you know, when we look back and go, why did Pete die at 50? Well, he eats tiramisu for breakfast, for crying out loud. Chris, bad news, sad news. Doesn't look like you're going to be making it home for Christmas like Chris Rea.
Well, the good news is, I love that song. The good news is I found a restaurant that does lasagna, and I had a great lasagna. And then I discovered that I probably can't come home for Christmas for the first time in 2 years because there's some new variant called Omicron or Oh My God or something, and it's going to kill us all and destroy the world. And basically, yeah, if I come to the UK, there's no guarantee I'll be able to come back. And at the moment, I think from what I understand, if I do come back, I'll have to sit in a government-controlled hotel building for 2 weeks, which is not something I particularly want to do. So, yeah, unfortunately, it looks like UK big plans, the thing that's kept me going, the thing that's kept me motivated the last 3 months is in the bin. So I'm not very happy about that. Bollocks.
No, it doesn't seem ideal, does it? And it's just come at a bad time. If your flight was like 2 or 3 weeks away, you might have a bit more of an idea what's going to be going on because this is very new. It may be incredibly transmissible, but it also couldn't be. It could be not as damaging as the previous ones. It could be gassing out, so to speak. The vaccines may very well be okay with it and restrict its spread. It's all up in the air at the moment. It's just come at a really weird time. What I hate about it is that it's forever sullied the video game Omicron, the No Man's Soul, the David Bowie video game from the 90s. Everyone's slagging off Omicron, and I seem to recall it being a really fun little romp with some exclusive David Bowie tracks.
That sounds quite good, actually. That sounds really good.
It was very good, very sexy. But Chris, in the meantime, I have been watching your video with Ryotaro hanging out with the little Akita dogs. I mean, not little Akita dogs. They're flipping
bloody
massive.
I've just literally was editing that video till 6 a.m. this morning. You know what I'm like? The video's never quite done. Up until the last minute, I'm still editing it. I'm still doing a punch in. I'm still putting in some music. I'm still putting the sound of a dog barking sound effects. Like, I'm always doing it, and I'm always finishing like a stupid o'clock in the morning. But it's done. I'm happy. And it's nice to have Ryotaro back for once. We haven't really seen much of him this year. I think he's been in like 3 videos. We've used him very sparingly this year. But it was nice. We actually shot that video, I think, back in summer. But I've just sort of been putting it off until now. And it's the right video. I think the reason I postponed it was there's no killer contents, so to speak, right? In the world of YouTube, Pete, you need the killer contents. Or
Chris, there's
happening.
Like loads of cool dogs. What's wrong with you?
It's not killer contents, though, is it?
I think pretty cool killer content stuff, mate.
They use that expression in Japanese as well. I remember
killer content
speaking. Yeah, it's like kira kontetsu or something like that. It's pretty cool. That's where I get it from. But I think the main part of the video was chicken. And if I have to have any criticism about that video, 24 hours in Akita, there wasn't enough chicken. It was like four skewers.
There wasn't enough chicken.
Not enough chicken, is it? Rubbish, mate.
You do
more
love
chicken.
A bit of chicken. Why is chicken such a great bedfellow for the scallion, the old spring onion? It just always seems to be next to the chicken, there's always just a bit of bloody scallion. Bore off. Give us something else.
It sort of cleanses the palate. You got the chicken, which is kind of salty, savoury, umami flavour, and the leek sort of cleanses the palate. It's supposed to be good for digestion, which chicken most certainly isn't when eaten in lots of quantities. But it was good. It was a good trip. I'm sure we'll be back in Akita soon. I love Akita, and I felt like it was a very short video. We could do better and we could do more. So I'm sure we'll be back there. And I've just come back from Hokkaido doing a sort of journey across Japan special spin-off with Joey and Natsuki, where we ate a lot of food, and that'll be coming out in 2 weeks. That should be a lot of fun as well. We experienced the first snows of winter. Nearly had a car crash in the first snows of winter as well. All car incidents I have in Japan seem to happen in Hokkaido, whether it's running out of fuel or skidding in the snow off a bridge. It's always Hokkaido, isn't it? But I love Hokkaido, and it was good fun. But that'll be coming out in about a fortnight.
Well, you were giving it the big lick, saying, once again, trying your best to bite off more than you can chew. And I think I voted, actually, on your Twitter poll whether to release a video a day up until Christmas. And I voted no, because I know what your mental health is like.
I have the best mental health. What are you on about, Pete? I think I'm going to do the 12 days of Chris Broadmus, and it's going to be 12 videos once every 2 days. A new video will come out, and it'll be something cool. You know, it might be something in the studio, it might be eating some food, might be eating some chicken, might be a live show. I just want to do something creative. I feel like I'm not creatively challenging myself anymore. You know, videos are just feels like a bit repetitive now sometimes. You know, you stand around the camera, you say, hello guys, we're going to look at XYZ. You have a drone shot, you have a GoPro shot, you have a car. Like, there's a pattern to
don't
it.
Tell any, don't I, tell everyone your secrets, Chris. So this is how you're making a Braun Japan
video. The secret's out. it just feels a bit like, oh, I've done that now. And I need to sort of do something. And I've discovered I've got a little Mario Kart remote control car, and I'm going to strap a 360 camera to it and see what happens. And that's the sort of content you can expect on the 12 days of Christmas.
Ride it around the streets of Sendai, just torturing people. This tiny little
to be fair,
Mario Kart.
That could be quite good. That would be quite cool, actually.
Yeah,
good
Japan
ideas,
from
Pete.
Below.
Thick and fast. What should I do, though? I mean, you're relatively smart. You're relatively creative.
Put a little camera on the broom handle, jam it down a sewer grate. Let's see what's down there, shall we? Oh, how many YouTubers go underneath the ground in the sewers with the Ninja Turtles? Come on.
And how many YouTubers are going to get their cameras back if they do that? Like, how am I going to get it back?
It's getting really cheap.
Probably not. Some kids
fly your drone down the sewer.
To be fair, I actually brought the drone here today, and I'm thinking of flying it inside the studio, doing some little creative shots. Creative, innit? Proper creative.
Do you trust it to?
Did I tell you about the time I first took off the drone? The first drone I ever got, Mavic Air. I took it off in my apartment, and did I tell you what happened?
I've let off a drone in a house before, and they are surprisingly loud, destructive, and it feels like the world is going to end because it just creates so much of a gust. Pages, papers everywhere. Wow,
it was really bad. And I mean, the first flight I've ever done with a drone where I controlled it, I took it off in my sitting room, right, and it was hovering, and I couldn't find out. I didn't know how the hell to land it. I know now. You can hold the stick down, and after about 2 seconds, it will land itself. Or there's a button on the remote. And I didn't know that because I'm stupid. I was like, I don't need to read the manual. I'll just fly the drone now. And I did it, and I couldn't get it down. It was really, really loud. And I imagine everyone in the apartment block could hear it and wondering what the hell was going on. So I tried to snatch it out of the air. But the drone had an obstacle avoidance in it, right? And it it evaded my hand. It did like a maneuver. Every time I went to jump and get it, it did like a maneuver and avoided my hand. So I got really aggressive one time and I jumped up really fast, snatched it out of the air, but I failed and my finger went through the blades of one of the propellers. And it like chopped off the top of my finger. But I was like pulling the damn thing down out of the air with all my life. One of my fingers had been like chopped off. There was blood spraying up the walls. And I was like, ah! And eventually I sort of like yanked it out of the air and flipped it over, at which point it switched off. But it was a real moment of horror. Man versus machine, blood up the walls. Like Terminator had burst into my sitting room when all was said and done. But I learned a lesson that day. Don't try and grab a drone out of the air. If you're smart.
I mean, the only time I've ever seen you fly a drone, you had a carrier bag with you full of replacement blades for another drone that you'd absolutely wankered, if you excuse my French.
That's true. That's very true. And of course, we couldn't fly it that day. It was too windy or something. I remember. Bloody drones, but I do love them.
Bloody drones.
Get yourself a drone. Get one for Christmas. Get the Mavic Pro 3. We've got a story this week from... doesn't say their name, but maybe
doesn't
we'll find it in the story. Hi, Chris and Pete. Big fan of the Abroad in Japan multiverse. My brother and I grew up here in America, but our mother is Japanese, so we'd often visit growing up. A whole side of the family is in Oita area, mainly Beppu. One year, beautiful place, Beppu, beautiful hot spring resort. Dogen lives there, the famous Dogen. One year, my brother and I went just by ourselves to Japan, and we went through Tokyo, Kyoto, and Hiroshima for the first time, but made sure to spend a week down south to see the family. Our mum has an old friend named Otsu-san, whose nickname growing up was Osan. Otsu-san owns a small rice farm where he and his friends grow rice and make their own artisan sake. Ooh, sounds good. Ooh. When we were visiting, he suggested us coming to the farm to show us how to farm rice. Keep in mind, I don't speak much Japanese, and my brother sure thinks he does. So we drove deep into the mountain backcountry to a small village. We pull up in his farmhouse, and he tells us to wait in the clearing adjacent. One by one, families in cars started showing up, none of whom we recognise. They all kind of give us that polite but confused look of, who the hell are these foreigners? But don't talk to us. Eventually, maybe a few dozen people end up gathering where we waited and all got in a circle as Otsu-san debriefed them all. Turns out a typhoon had flattened all of the crops so their machines couldn't harvest them. So he asked his whole village to come out and harvest it by hand. And apparently, this is what we actually had signed up for. 4 long hours of back-bending, mud-filled work in the hot, humid sun, not being able to communicate and no way to leave as we were in the middle of fucking nowhere. We were harvesting that super traditional style where you make them into bunches and toss them onto stands made of wooden poles. I had this older gentleman always behind me yelling at me whenever I did things wrong. and I'm like, mate, I'm supposed to be on a vacation here. I'm doing my best. There was a moment of respite, however, when I saw a group of people bringing over a huge water cooler. I thought, finally, I'm so thirsty and hot. I waited in a long line to drink, but almost spat out the drink immediately. I was expecting cold, refreshing water, but I was met by the bitter taste of hot tea, mugicha. Who the hell drinks hot mugicha on a hot day in a field? Needless to say, I left some of myself in that muddy field, but it was all worth it in the end somehow. While most of us were working in the field, the rest of the families were cooking up a feast of karaage chicken and vegetables and a beautiful, tasty rice. All the ingredients were brought in by the other farmers, and during the meal, each family took turns to stand up and give a small speech. My brother and I didn't understand anything, but Otsu-san would point and say, those guys brought the chicken, those guys brought the eggplants, and so forth. Needless to say, it's one of the best meals I've ever had. All the best, Peter from Virginia, USA. There you go, Pete from Virginia. What a lovely story. No real morals there. Just a story
about
some rice in a field.
Don't be tricked into manual labour. I mean, the moral is don't be tricked into manual labour through a lack of Japanese. I mean, you know, like, I mean, getting given like hot barley tea to drink in a rice field after you've just been working bloody hard. Like, you know how they say like that hot drinks cool you down? Bullshit. Absolute nonsense. Everyone knows that's not true. But it's just kind of like, yeah, I mean, it's not ideal, is it? You're on holiday and then you just get absolutely press ganged into working in a field for a little while. But look, the food at the end of it, the drink at the end of it was the best meal I've ever had because they'd work for it. They'd achieved something that day, I think.
Yeah. that's nice. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I like that idea there of just inviting a friend over and then being like, oh, look, the wall needs papering in the studio. And look, there's the paper there. If only you were to do it. But it does feel like borderline exploitation. But at least it was a free meal at the end of it. So just be careful. I think that's the moral of the story. Be careful when someone invites you to their farm after a typhoon. I think it's kind of nice though, right? It shows you the sort of the village spirit of rural life in Japan. Like there's so many of these kind of rural villages and communities around the country. Like you'll be driving through the mountains, you'll see like a cluster of houses. There won't be any convenience stores. There won't be any shops. There won't be any fun nearby. And you just think, how the hell do these people live? Like, in the UK, I'd say we don't really have that way of life, that real sort of rustic, traditional, sort of backwater way of life. You know, there's a maybe because it's not a mountainous country and we're always near a shop or something. But in Japan, you do stumble across villages and communities that look sort of untouched from the 20th century. And you wonder how they live and how they get by. But it's a beautiful thing. And half the fun, I think, of exploring the countryside is coming across these sort of communities. Usually with very elderly people and no future in sight for the town, sadly. Bit like Akita. It's a bit like that in Akita.
Yeah. But the but I guess you do see them sometimes in England, I think, certainly, sort of driving around. But
Hartlepool,
again, if you ever go to a wedding and it's like in a barn in some farmer's field, and you're like, I mean, they've diversified there because this barn looks like it's seen better days, and all they've done is put some bunting up, and suddenly it's a wedding venue that they can hire out for £10,000 a bloody time.
Beautiful.
Try getting a taxi.
Beautiful way of life.
Can't get one.
A beautiful way of life, but not as beautiful as the place, a town called Susami, a small fishing town in Wakayama. And our story of the week is pretty cool, actually. There's an underwater mailbox in Susami, which is a fishing community in Wakayama, quite a rural place, and they collect 1,500 pieces of mail every year, and it's supposed to be the world's deepest underwater post box. And it actually accepts mail. It's located 10 meters deep and is officially recognized by the local postal office in Susami. People can buy postcards nearby that are waterproofed by using oil-based paint and then either dive underwater by themselves after training or hire one of the local divers to deliver it to the postbox. There's approximately 1,000 to 1,500 pieces of mail that are delivered to the box every year. The mail is collected by an employee of the local store that sells the waterproof postcards, and then it gets delivered to the post office every few days. And the local store is owned by a diver, Yamatani-san, who specializes in diving. Why is there a mailbox submerged 10 meters deep underwater, Pete? What do you think?
Because every rural town in Japan just has a fuck about every now and again. And they sort of say, look at what we're doing. And people talk about it. And then the international press talk about it. And we say, isn't Japan a fantastic place to go? Because there's this kind of nonsense going on. They're just dreamers. They're just people who know how to find an angle for their remote fishing village. And they've managed it with this. I mean, I wouldn't suggest posting, you know, postal ballots off in there. I wouldn't recommend posting medicine for your granny in there because it would probably spoil. But it's only 10 metres deep. Do you really have to be trained to swim down 10 metres? I mean, I guess that's quite high,
deep,
isn't it? Yeah. Is it very deep?
It's pretty damn deep,
it is,
trust
it?
Me. I mean, I remember diving down like 5 metres and my ears felt like they were about to explode. Like 10 metres is fairly deep and quite dangerous if you're not trained. But you're right on the money, though. They basically did it in 1999, they came up with the idea to promote the Kumano Kodo network of pilgrimage trails that go through South Kansai and through the areas of Wakayama. Apparently, prior to the underwater mailbox, the town of Susami, which has a humble population of 3,600, it was just a small fishing town. They really didn't have much to attract tourists. And as a result, an underwater mailbox was proposed by a former postmaster. And to this day, 38,000 letters have been posted to the box, and it's also got a Guinness Book of World Record for being the deepest underwater mailbox in the world, 2002. Apparently also, to prevent severe corrosion on the postbox, there are two of them that are rotated every year. When one isn't being used, it's being repainted and cleaned. I mean, that's kind of cool. As you said, though, there is this sort of mentality in Japanese villages and towns that they have to always sort of one up each other and have like the biggest, the best, the sort of the most XYZ in Japan. I was looking for some ideas for a video recently, and I was looking over towards Kanazawa, really nice town that I've yet to explore a bit more. And near Kanazawa, I came across a beach that had the world's longest bench, and I thought, is that content? Is that a worthy day-long excursion to go and film the world's longest bench?
Do a whole quarter of an hour film just set on the bench. You know, do the middle for a bit, do the left-hand side for a bit, go under it for a bit. Oh, there's so many options, Chris. Think of the possibilities.
The sad truth of the world's longest bench is this one is no longer the world's longest bench. They've got usurped by, I think, a bench in Germany or Switzerland. So it's now like the third world's longest bench. And then, of course, we had the story, didn't we, a few months ago of the $200,000 squid that was just stuck on a beach somewhere in that neck of the woods. Like, these towns, they have to sort of one-up each other somehow. I do think it's kind of beautiful. I would like to go look up some videos of this place now, but it just seems a bit ridiculous. You buy the postcard from a man, you give it to the man, he puts it in the mailbox, but then he also collects it himself because he's the diver. It all feels it's like a Ponzi scheme or something.
Gives the proof, yeah. And it's one of those things that it's not as if you can take a picture, you know, with the kawaii fingers in front of the post box, because it's 10 meters rubbish underneath the water. So why didn't they just make a really tall post box that you've got to use some kind of like a big ladder to climb up and post it? Because at least you could see that and take a picture in front of it and say, look, Mum, I just sent a postcard from this really tall post box that's like 3 stories high. That's 10 meters tall. What's wrong with that?
It's a health hazard. Health and safety risk. If I did it, I'd probably drown. My body would be floating alongside the mailbox. It's a sad image. But I think it's kind of cool. I was actually looking at a map the other day of places I've yet to really explore, and Wakayama is definitely one of them. It's extremely remote. Like, to get to it, it's a real effort and a lot of car journeys and train rides. But I might give it a shot. I might head round there now and go and have a look. We'll do a video.
Interesting.
We'll be back with the Fax Machine, guys, and your questions and stories in just a moment.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
And we're back with the fax machine. What have we got from our listeners this week, Mr. Donaldson?
We got a message from Emre, writing from Turkey. I hope it is, and sort of isn't, the Emre who used to play football for Newcastle United. Hello, Chris and Pete. I do Japanese voice acting as a side job, and I've always wondered if Japanese people's perception of you change when they hear you speaking Japanese fluently. Given that Chris's Japanese is really good, do you agree with that, Chris?
No.
he's doing a funny face. Have you ever experienced a change of attitude towards you whenever people hear your Japanese? Or do Japanese people care about it at all? The accent and the right pronunciation and stuff like that. Thank you very much, Emre, from Turkey. I mean, is that kind of like a Nihongo Jozu kind of situation? Do you get a lot of that?
I mean, people tend to only say Nihongo Jozu if you're clearly shit at Japanese. If you're like, Watashi no namae wa Chrissy, and they're like, Nihongo Jozu, Kurisha-san. And like that's if you actually speak Japanese quite well, you tend not to get that. I think if you speak Japanese, you'll get a general sense of relief from the listener. They'll be like, oh, thank God, I don't have to speak English now. They can speak Japanese, even if it's a little bit. So it's just relief, really. And certainly open a lot of doors. Like people, they do open up a lot more if you can speak their native tongue. You know, I mean, how would you feel if you met someone that couldn't speak, your native language, in our case, English? It can be a bit difficult to communicate, right? I think if you can speak Japanese, it'll open a lot of doors and certainly have a lot more fun when you come to Japan, particularly at bars, just sitting in a bar, having a drink, chatting in Japanese. There's nothing better than that. As long as you avoid the sort of the same repetitive questions, which happens at every restaurant. We got one here from Mimi in Stockholm. She says, hello, Chris and Pete. My son is the oldest of five children. Their ages are 14, 12, 6, 4, and number 1. Sounds like a lottery
sequence.
It's an algebra test in the making. My question is Japan a family-friendly country? Do people bring their children to restaurants and shops, on public transport, sightseeing? The young ones are not likely to understand the importance of being quiet on the train, so to speak. Thank you for the podcast, guys. All the best. Mimi from Stockholm. I don't know, really. If I had kids, I don't know if I'd bring them to Japan, really. It would be a lot of effort and very, very expensive. I'm just thinking about the money, right? Just take the kids to Disneyland and be done with it. I don't know. What would you do, Pete? Would you take your kids here? Is it a family-friendly country?
I've not seen a huge amount of kind of Western kids on the trains and stuff. I think it's just because it is so bloody expensive. It's one of those trips that you can only really do when you're a little bit younger and got a bit more disposable income. But the 14-year-old, 12-year-old might appreciate it. Once you get in sub 10, I would say there's less to excite, but I mean there's enough theme parks and things with all the queues you can eat as an English person.
God, yeah.
It's something you rarely see, to be honest.
There's definitely there's some cool hotels and places springing up to cater for families, though. Like if you are coming to Tokyo and you're a listener with a family, there's a really good chain called Mimaru, M-I-M-A-R-U, Mimaru. And they're kind of throughout Japan, and the hotel rooms have like a kitchen and a table and some sort of seating area. So it's good for like families. Yeah. You can actually kind of relax in there in a bit more space. So these sort of hotels are springing up, which I think is good. I think it could be good, though. I think it could be fun. It could be like the ultimate cultural experience for your kids, and they'll change them and make them better people, just like living in Japan has done for me, because I'm definitely a better person now, aren't I, Pete? Yeah. I'm so much better. Thrice
never
the
knew
man
you
I
before.
Was.
Don't want to know you now.
Oh, you didn't, did you? Very true.
Got a message from Emily on the fax machine. Hello, Chris and Pete. My name is Emily, and I am from the Netherlands. When I came across the article about Princess Mako losing her royal status because she married a commoner, I've been wondering how the Japanese view the monarchy. I watched that film last night, Spencer. Which is very good. I'm not a big royalist, but you know, confused about it all. But it was quite a fun little romp interpretation. Are they being openly gossiped about in Japan? The Japanese royalty, that is, discussed and criticised like the British royal family is in England. And what ways are the monarchies similar and different from one another? Lots of love from Emily. Chris, do they talk about the Japanese royal family a lot? Are they quite gossipy? I imagine they probably are, aren't they?
I think certainly Princess Mako and this whole sort of thing at the moment where she married this man who is in debt, it's caused a storm. And now she's left the royal family and is now living in New York. And she's been under a lot of scrutiny for that. But the emperor himself, I've never really seen people gossip or talk ill of the emperor, his niece, Princess Mako. They are scrutinised a lot.
Because women.
Because basically.
Patriarchy in Japan is very strong.
It is. Yeah, it's pretty bad. I feel pretty bad for how she's sort of had to deal with the situation. But I feel like it's still not as bad as the royal family and everything going on there. What was Spencer about? Was that about Princess Diana?
It was that weekend at, is it Sandringham or one of the palaces, wherever they Balmoral, wherever they have Christmas usually, where the whole family gets together and basically Princess Diana decided to...
I think it's Sandringham in...
Sandringham, right,
Suffolk,
okay. Well, bearing in mind that it was whatever that weekend was where she decided to divorce Charles for various different reasons. But it was kind of like a... It was an interpretation. Nobody really knows what went on, so they basically just have a bit of fun with it. And it was a lot of fun, and it wasn't like a straight, kind of spitting image style impression of Lady Diana. It was all kind of, nicely done. Lovely little film.
Did it make you pro or against the royal family after watching it? Yeah, I don't really know how I feel about the royal family, to be honest. It depends what mood I'm on. Depends what mood I'm in, to be honest. And that's why I would be a terrible, terrible dictator. Things would be very dependent on my mood and how much chicken that I'd eaten on the day in question. True. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into Abroad Japan Podcast at gmail.com. We'll be back, guys. Do it all over again in the next few days. But no matter where you are, out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great few days and check out the 24 hours in Akita video featuring the great Ryotaro and lots of chicken. It's a good one. But for now, guys, have a good one. See you then. Bye.
In Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.